This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
This is the opinion section of USA Today on Tuesday, May 7th, 2024. How I'm Answering My Kids' Gaza Questions by Janine Mojahar. To my children, my dearest loves, over the past several months of horror and tragedy of the Palestinian-American community, you have asked me questions for which I do not have an answer. I always endeavor to give you my most honest and complete answers I can. I owe you that, for the Palestinian community is your community. You've asked me, how did you and Baba fall in love? And I told you it was a story that could only come in existence in a few places in the world, America being among them. Where else would a third culture kid from India who grew up in Qatar and the United States fall in love with someone of Irish and Palestinian descent? Is there a way to save Gaza, the people of Gaza as well? As we first began to witness the mass destruction of life in Gaza, you asked me, will Palestine still exist when this war is over? Palestine will always exist, my loves. It will exist the through you in your stories, in your tears and laughter, in your triumphs and successes, in your legacies. Your Palestinian-ness is interwoven with your Indian-ness, American-ness, Muslim-ness. You will always be a part of the Palestine story, and Palestine will always be a part of yours. You have asked me again and again, is there a way to save the peace of Gaza? Why isn't anyone helping them? Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank are enduring innumerable horrific injustices. It is heartbreaking to help and helpless witness their massacre day. It is heartbreaking to helplessly witness their massacre day after day. But look around you, there are also thousands of people raising their voices to bring attention to what is happening. They are calling out the injustices, they are educating others, they are organizing nonviolent actions. Some of them are risking their lives to help doctors, aid workers, journalists, and more. Some of them have lost their lives in their efforts to help because they knew that saving even one life is like saving all of humanity. You have also asked me, is it possible to speak for Gaza and not be called a terrorist? I wish you were growing up in a world in which that question did not have to be asked. There will be people who will throw accusations at you, call you names, and try to silence you. There will be those who will malign your words and twist them to mean things that you did not say. And you will be attributed to people whose opinions and actions you do not condone. What I wish you would ask me. There are also the questions that I wish you'd ask me, so that you might know the gifts that I'm trying to give to the world, this cruel and beautiful world. I would have you ask me, why did you and Baba give me the name that you did? Each of you have been bestowed names with meaning and purpose. They are names that I hope can also be maps for your life journey. Suleiman, your namesake, the prophet Suleiman, Solomon, was known for being compassionate and just and a just king. Among his gifts was the knowledge of languages of all living things. The Quran tells us a story about an ant who heard Suleiman and his army approaching her colony. She calls out to her community, "O ants, enter your dwellings, and you are not crushed by Suleiman and his soldiers." The prophet Suleiman heard her urgent warning and ordered his army to change course so that the ants' home would be saved. Even those among us who are perceived to be the smallest or weakest or rendered invisible can be heard by those in power, and their voices can be a source of change. Marwa, your name is witness to the struggles and miracles of Hagar, a black woman who was once enslaved. When the prophet Abraham left Hagar and her baby Ishmael in the desert, she was alone, but she did not despair. She turned to God with urgent prayer and action. When the milk in her breast dried, she began to run between the mountains of Safa and Marwa, looking for help and calling upon God's mercy. Soon after, the angel Gabriel appeared to her. He struck the ground from which a spring emerged with fresh water, Zamzam. It is around the spring that the city of Mecca arose and still stands today. Holy sanctuaries are born from the footsteps of single black mothers. Dawood. Before the prophet Dawood, David was a king. He was a young soldier who had the courage to stand up to forces much bigger than him. In the Muslim story, after Goliath was slayed and Dawood became king, he has a miracle bestowed upon him. Iron is made malleable in Dawood's hand, and he is taught how to weave it into armor so that he and his armies may have protection in war. Even the hardest of things can soften in the hands of the righteous, so that it could serve a better purpose in providing safety. We are not alone. I would also have you ask me, why do you always speak of stories? Our stories are inheritance. From me, your father, our families, our ancestors, our faith. Those stories will tell you where and who you came from, where you have roots and homes, where you hear calls of struggle and belonging. Some stories will be yours exclusively. You will create them from your own experiences and pass them on to generations who come after you. In my own quiet moments of despair, I ask myself profound questions too, like, how can we possibly go on in this darkness? But in those moments, I look into your eyes and remind myself, we are not alone. As the poet Jalaluddin Rumi said, come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is not a caravan of despair. There are many who walk with us in solidarity, partnership, and purpose. We have important tools in our hands, tools I am trying every day to share with you, our faith, our values, and resilience, our joy. May we use them well and build equitable, expansive, shared tables with blessings and bounty for all. Jenin Mohajir is a vice president of Interfaith America, an organization that engages religious diversity to build the common good. Florida's Fake Meat Ban is a Bad Move All Around by Nick Cattogio. The worst moment for libertarianism came on Wednesday when the second most popular populist in the GOP made an exciting announcement of his own. No more will the scourge of meat grown in labs trouble the Sunshine State, Governor Ron DeSantis declared. Henceforth, producing or selling the stuff is an honest-to-goodness crime punishable by up to 60 days in jail. If you want to make a living peddling meat in Florida, you had better be hacking off pieces of a cow, pig, or chicken, which made it not just a grim week for libertarians in the GOP, but unusually grim for animals as well. I often write about the excess of populism, and that's what Florida's new law demonstrates. With unusual efficiency, it combines the most loathsome elements of the sort of new right politics that DeSantis has embraced to get ahead in his party. It's imperious, protectionist, deeply corrupt, and panders to paranoia that animates so much of the GOP's crankish base. Every conservative will have the same institution about Florida's dumb law. If there are people willing to try lab-grown meat, and there assuredly are, and there are people willing to sell it to them, by what right does the government have to interfere in the transaction? In the free state of Florida, why should residents be free to participate in market for fake meat? The only good answer I can think of would involve safety concerns with the product, but there aren't any. Even if there were, those concerns might plausibly be addressed by regulatory production rather than criminalization. Nor is DeSantis seriously arguing that lab-grown meat poses a grave public health risk. How could he, when just two companies have received Food and Drug Administration approval to produce the stuff, and neither one has stock available for purchase in the U.S.? DeSantis embraces government and paternalism. The pre-Trump Tea Party version of DeSantis would agree with all of that empathetically, I suspect. The post-Trump populist version not only sees no problem with state paternalism in this matter, he revealed with an authoritarian bombcast at Wednesday's news conference. Take your fake-grown, lab-grown meat elsewhere. We're not doing that in the state of Florida, the governor crowed at one point. At another, he compared eating the meat to eating insects and sneered that Florida has heard enough on that. Individual Floridians can decide for themselves whether they've heard enough. Why does DeSantis Augustus feel obliged to decide for them? This episode reveals an ideological fault line between the two factions of the right. Conservatives believe that the government should override individual agency when a compelling public interest requires it to do so. Populists seem to believe that advancing a right-wing cultural agenda is always a compelling interest, even in the cases like this one, where the specific interest in question is anything but compelling. Needless to say, the populist license have behaved imperiously runs only one way. If President Joe Biden signed a law passed by a Democratic Congress banning meat and declared that we Americans have heard enough about eating animals, the new right indignation at his contempt for individual agency would erupt like Carcota. DeSantis's own remarks illustrate that point. Compare his disdain for the fact that the World Economic Forum recommends eating insects to reduce carbon emissions with his obliviousness to his own petty authoritarianism in banning lab-grown meat. At least the WEF is offering you a choice. In Florida, the governor chooses for you. The worst-case scenario is that other Republicans emulate Florida and start banning the production and sale of fake meat in their own backyards. The fact that the United States isn't aggressively producing cultivated meat won't stop global competitors like China from doing so, and so jobs and dollars will flow there instead. But wait, it gets worse. Ban on lab-grown meat, really a big disguise on protection of big AG. Florida's fake meat ban is actually a grotesquely brazen case of rent-seeking, lightly disguised, and culture war tappings to make it more palatable to populist suckers. There's nothing more high-minded behind the ban than shielding the state's 15,000 cattle ranchers from competitive pressure, and DeSantis' administration isn't straining to pretend otherwise. We must protect our incredible farmers and integrity of American agriculture, Florida Agriculture Commission said in a news release. Lab-grown meat is a disgraceful attempt to undermine our proud traditions and prosperity and is in direct opposition to authentic agriculture. The governor himself was explicit about the ban's protectionist intentions. What we're protecting here is the cattle industry against acts of man, against an ideological agenda that wants to finger agriculture as a problem that views things like grazing cattle as destroying our climate, DeSantis said at his news conference, reminding the audience that Florida has one of the top cattle industries in the country. Exactly why that industry should be protected from a competitor that potentially might produce more jobs, more wealth, fewer hungry people, and a better environment is unclear, except for the fact that Big Ag has vastly more money and political influence than the nascent fake meat industry does. To grasp how grim the state of the GOP is under the leadership of Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis, mediate on the fact that the following quote came from a Democrat rather than a Republican. I don't think the state of Florida should be choosing winners and losers and allow corporate capture to take place, where we're basically bending laws to benefit specific industries, State Rep. Anna Ekmanska said in March about banning lab-grown meat. Lab-grown meat won't change lives that dramatically anytime soon, but every useful technology begins as a fledgling. The governor would rather smother the latest one for political advantage than give it space to compete. Nick Cotoggio writes the Boiling Frogs newsletter for the Dispatch, where this column first appeared. That was the opinion section of USA Today on Tuesday, May 7th, 2024. This is the money section of USA Today on Tuesday, May 7th, 2024. Virgin's brilliant lady to launch in September 2025. Virgin Voyages' new ship is on its way. The adults-only cruise line announced its fourth vessel, Brilliant Lady, will begin sailing in September of 2025 from New York. Brilliant Lady, which had been set to start service in the Caribbean late last year, will spend its inaugural season on the North American tour, sailing from the Big Apple, Miami, Los Angeles, Seattle, and completing at the Panama Canal crossing. Dave & Buster's app to add customer wagering. Dave & Buster's will soon begin letting customers wager on popular arcade games in its app. The company is partnering with gaming provider Lucra to provide customers with a fully immersive experience at venues nationwide, according to Lucra. The partnership will integrate Lucra's gamification software into the Dave & Buster's app, allowing loyalty members to compete with each other, earn rewards, and unlock exclusive perks, Lucra announced. The betting function will be available only to players age 18 or older and in 44 states, according to CNBC. USA Today has reached out to Dave & Buster's. Boeing compensates Alaska Air for grounding. Alaska Air Group has received $61 million in supplier credit memos from Boeing as additional compensation for the hit from a temporary grounding of 737 MAX 9 jets, the carrier said on Friday. The airline had received $162 million in cash as compensation from the plane maker in the first quarter. An Alaska Airlines-operated MAX 9 jet experienced a mid-air cabin panel blowout in January, which led to the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration grounding 171 of the aircraft for about 3 weeks. The credit memos can be used to make future purchases at Boeing, Alaska said on Friday. Man buys $14 Cartier earrings after error. A 27-year-old man spent less than $14 on Cartier earrings after finding a price error. Rogelio Villarreal of Mexico posted April 20th via X that in December he noticed the 18-carat rose gold Clash de Cartier earrings on the jeweler's website for 237 pesos or $13.91 instead of $11,600. Villarreal wrote, USA Today contacted Cartier but did not receive a response. Cartier tried to cancel his order and offered gifts for the inconvenience. Villarreal rejected the gifts and used a form of the Cartier website to cite a federal consumer protection law in Mexico. White job seekers benefit most from worker referrals. Who you know often remains the biggest asset, by Jessica Guinn. Flashing a polished resume, a sharp cover letter, and a LinkedIn profile doesn't guarantee a foot in the door. Making the shortlist, let alone the final cut, is not just a matter of startling credentials. It's still largely a matter of who you know, and nothing counts more than a company insider putting in a good word with a hiring manager. But research shows that these employee referrals don't give everyone a fair shake. White candidates are almost twice as likely to be hired as those from other racial and ethnic groups, even in organizations committed to diversity, according to new findings from diversity strategy and consulting firm Paradigm. Because white people, and white men in particular, historically have been the majority group in most organizations, especially in leadership roles, job candidates recommend through employee referral programs are disproportionately white and male, Paradigm co-founder and CEO Joel Emerson said. In both our personal and professional lives, our networks tend to be composed of people who look like us, she said. You essentially have a self-perpetuating cycle. Job applicants were more diverse than referrals in most companies Paradigm studied. Black candidates represented 3% of employee referrals, but 5% of all job applicants. Latino and Hispanic candidates, 4% of employee referrals, but 7% of all job applicants. And Asian candidates, 28% of employee referrals, but 40% of all job applicants, Paradigm found. All of this compounds and becomes a disadvantage for candidates of color, Emerson said. Wake-up call for employers as nation becomes more diverse. Emerson says that Paradigm's study comes at a critical moment for the organizations as the workforce shrinks and the nation grows more diverse. Most organizations her firm works with already struggle to hire, advance, and retain employees from underrepresented groups. People of color, women and non-binary people, disabled people, veterans, and the LGBTQ community, Emerson said. This should be a bit of a wake-up call, she said. You very likely have gaps in hiring, performance management, promotions, and employees' experience that are disadvantaged groups of employees that are currently underrepresented, but growing as a relative proportion of overall workforce. Emerson said that if employees can't remove those obstacles now, they will struggle to attract the best employees in the future. The Paradigm study also counters misleading narratives from anti-diversity activists who claim that diversity, equity, inclusion programs discriminate against white people and give underrepresented groups an unfair advantage in hiring and promotions, according to Emerson. The data shows that simply isn't the case. She said, as USA Today investigation of the nation's largest companies found that the top ranks are predominantly white and male, while women and people of color are concentrated at the lowest level, with less pay, fewer perks, and little opportunity for advancement. Job candidates referred by employees more likely to get hired. Popular in organizations across industries, referral programs are often considered a win-win-win. Job applicants with a personal recommendation have the inside track. Employers get vetted candidates who start sooner and stay longer. An employee who dropped a friend's name collects a cash bonus. For many companies, they are the primary or top source of hired employees, Emerson said. Referred candidates have a much better shot than job hunters who submit their resume online or who apply through recruiters, staffing agencies, and career fairs. Paradigm looked at data from more than 2 million job candidates and found that referred candidates were over 4.5 times as likely to get hired. Employee referral programs can harm diversity efforts. Research studies have raised concerns about referral programs for years, as have anti-discrimination regulators. In 2018, PayScale research found that referral programs benefited white men more than any other demographic group. White women were 12% less likely, men of color 26% less likely, and women of color 35% less likely to receive job referrals than their white male counterparts. The compensation data provider found, it is recognized that employee referral program can jeopardize diversity efforts, particularly if your current workforce demographics are not diverse, PayScale's pay equity strategist Ruth Thomas said. We also know that from studying ethnicity pay gaps that the lack of professional networks is a driver of pay gaps. The analysis of PayScale found that a woman hired through a referral program got an average of a $3,700 increase in pay, but a man hired through a referral program got more than twice that. Unless the workforce is racially and ethnically diverse, exclusive reliance on word of mouth should be avoided because it's likely to create a barrier to equal employment opportunity for racial or ethnic groups that are not already represented in employers' workforce, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission says on its website. In 2017, tech firm Palantir settled a lawsuit by the Labor Department that alleged it discriminated against Asian job applicants in several types of technical jobs. The problem, the government said, was that Palantir relied too heavily on employees to refer job candidates. More than half of the hires came through an employee referral program, disproportionately excluding Asian applicants. Palantir said the Labor Department's analysis was flawed. Emerson said employee referrals are a smart way for organizations to staff up. In the past, organizations diversified job referrals by encouraging employees to think about people in their networks who hail from diverse backgrounds. Given the anti-diversity backlash we're seeing right now, many companies be less likely to do this right now, Emerson said. But employers can still provide fairness of employee referral programs, she says. Here's what you can do. Ask every job candidate the same questions and evaluate their answers using the same criteria. Conduct candidate debriefs to explore why interviewers prefer one candidate over others. Do not disclose the interviewers that a candidate was referred by someone inside the company. Consider whether candidates gave strong answers or have more relevant experience, or did they vibe more with interviewers. Summer trip plans, book now. Sweet spot arrives for travelers to find savings on flights for August excursions, by Eve Chen. Revenge travel is so last year. It's not necessarily about just getting out of the house anymore, said Signe Standback, Global Insights and Trends lead at Pinterest, which has seen more than 1 billion travel searches and more than 10 billion travel saves over the past year. Sure, many of the usual suspects are once again among the most popular destinations across multiple search engines this year, but she said this summer it's more so about traveling with intention. According to NerdWallet's Summer 2024 Travel Report, 45% of Americans plan to take a trip requiring a hotel stay or flights this summer, with expenses averaging just under $3,600. A fifth of those travelers expect to go into debt to pay for the vacations. Here's what to consider when booking a summer trip, including where to go, when to travel, and how to save. What is the best place to travel in the summer? The answer is subjective, especially this summer. Everyone's kind of choosing their own adventure based off of what their needs are for travel, Steinbeck said. Pinterest's Summer 2024 Travel Report found summer travelers are most interested in adventure, exploring mysterious or uncharted destinations, and rest. Searches for quiet life jumped 530%, but that doesn't mean the same thing to everyone. My mother actually just took a yoga retreat to Panama, Steinbeck said. That's what she needed to do in order to get the rest that she needed, but the well-being that she needed. But for me, when I think of rest and restoration, I simply think about going to the beach, a spa, and just sitting and being by myself. Solo travel remains popular. Solo travel searches reach an all-time high in Google in January, but again, not for everyone. For Gen Z specifically, that need is to gather and reconnect with their community because they were in isolation for so long and during very meaningful moments in their lives, Stanbeck said. She noted group travel and road trips are of keen interest to Gen Zs. It's not necessarily about traveling and going out and going to restaurants and going to bars and clubs, she added. We actually see that a lot with the younger generations. They're kind of stepping away from that and really considering their well-being when taking time off. Where do most tourists go in summer? Expedia's Summer Outlook and Google Flights identified the same cities among their most searched summer 2024 destinations based on flights, though rankings varied by platform. Top five domestic destinations: New York, Orlando, Florida, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Seattle. Top five international destinations: London, Cancun, Mexico, Rome, Tokyo, and Paris, host of the Summer Olympics. Elian's partners found slightly different results in their analysis from more than 6 million flight itineraries for trips between 5 and 8 days in the length for travel booked between Memorial Day weekend and Labor Day weekend. Instead of LA and Vegas, Alliance named Boston and Honolulu among this summer's top five domestic destinations. Internationally, San Jose, Del Cabo, Mexico, Ørjan-Steed, Aruba, and Punta Cana, Dominican Republic made Alliance top five instead of Rome, Paris, and Tokyo. I'm expecting crowds to rival last summer's in popular overseas cities, Expedia's travel expert Melanie Fish said, noting how places like Barcelona and Venice are trying to curb over-tourism. They're trying fees, and if that's not enough, they're going to have to go even further. How can I save on a trip? Summer trips are already costly for many travelers. Americans with household incomes under $100,000 accounted for nearly half, 46%, of intended leisure travel spend in summer of 2023, according to Deloitte's Facing Travel feature report from April. Expedia's Fish shared five tips for booking summer 2024 vacations. Bone to your trip. Booking airfare and hotel at the same time can earn you deep discounts. Travel midweek or later in the summer if that's an option. You'll save money and save yourself from fighting crowds. Fly early in the day. The early bird who takes the first flight of the day will typically get a better price and a lower chance of delays and cancellations. Book once, earn twice. You can stack rewards for your travel credit card and your airline. Just go. Don't pressure yourself to create the trip of a lifetime. Do it in bite-sized chunk if possible. How far ahead should I book travel? The sweet spot is now, Fish said. We're within the 21 to 60 day pre-travel window to save around 15% on airfare. So now is the time to plan. That means ready, set, but maybe wait until August to actually go. She said travelers can save an average of $250 on international flights if they wait until the peak summer travel season passes. It's 15% cheaper on average to fly domestically in August versus June, 30% cheaper to fly to Europe in late summer, and 55% cheaper to fly to Mexico and the Caribbean in August. She said, of course, August is peak hurricane season, so that has something to do with the price dip. Woman sues resort after husband's snorkeling death, by Kathleen Wong. A Michigan woman and her family are suing a Maui resort, the Hawaiian Tourism Authority, and the Hawaiian Visitors and Convention Bureau after her husband died while snorkeling. She doesn't believe it was a drowning. Patricia and Ray Johnson, along with four friends, arrived at Fairmont Kialani on Maui on the evening of February 23, 2022. The plans to visit multiple islands over several weeks. This was the couple's sixth time in Hawaii, and they had snorkeled the Hawaiian waters many times in the past, Patricia told. On the morning of February 25th, some of the travelers, including Ray, went snorkeling around Walia Beach, which fronts the resort, while Patricia opted to walk a trail that overlooks the beach. I looked out and I saw my husband and my friends or people out there, she told USA Today. I'm waving at him and it hits me. Patricia saw what looked like other snorkelers helping Ray. She hurried down to the beach, but things deteriorated quickly. At first, Ray had his head above water and was returning to the beach, but then the 64-year-old fell onto his back and his head snapped back at one point and had to be pulled in. I knew he was gone, she said. 911 was called, but medical professionals failed to resuscitate Ray. The autopsy report called Ray's death an accidental drowning, which Patricia doesn't believe. I was watching him come in. How could he be drowning? According to her friends who were snorkeling with him, Ray was talking and also diving under the water. At one point, he came up and said, "You gotta help me. I'm having trouble breathing." And that's when he decided to head back to shore. I don't think when people are drowning in a conditional manner, you're going to be conversing, she said. By a landslide, the leading cause of death for Hawaii tourists is drowning, and of ocean drownings for residents and visitors, the majority occur when snorkeling. While the ocean is powerful and unpredictable, some advocates, including the Johnsons, are trying to bring attention to a lesser-known medical condition that specifically poses risks to snorkelers and hasn't gotten much attention over the years. Rapid-onset pulmonary edema, ROPE. The Johnson family believes ROPE is the real cause of Ray's death, and the lawsuit alleges that Hawaii travel entities have failed to educate the public on ROPE, resulting in an important public health concern, according to the complaint filed by the Circuit Court of the First Circuit in the state of Hawaii in February 2024. The case should begin the fact discovery process this week. The Hawaiian Tourism Authority, Hawaiian Visitors and Convention Bureau, and Fairmont Kialani declined to comment on the lawsuit. I would like to see warnings out there, Patricia told USA Today. I truly believe my husband would still be here if he had been warned. How is snorkeling dangerous? Breathing through a snorkel tube is similar to pinching your nose and breathing in your mouth. The resistance is immediate. ROPE occurs when the negative pressure on the lungs ends up sucking bodily fluids out of the capillaries and into the airways, according to Dr. Raj Desgupta, a California-based pulmonologist. That snorkel resistance to airflow, he said, they want to breathe in, but they have to breathe through the straw. Once fluid is in the lungs, it becomes difficult to breathe, and people can experience hypoxia, or a lack of sufficient oxygen. You slowly become weak, then into a loss of consciousness, Desgupta said. Underlying health conditions such as heart and lung disease also increase someone's predisposed risk for ROPE, he said. If a person begins to feel shortness of breath, they may panic, causing more exertion, which can be life-threatening if they're already suffering from a lack of oxygen, Desgupta said. Drowning by ROPE is fundamentally different than typical drowning when people are aspirating water or submerged and often showing signs of distress and complaint, the complaint said. In October 2017, after a California woman, an avid swimmer and snorkeler, Nancy Peacock, died while snorkeling in calm waters off the coast of Hawaii Island in a full face mask and no signs of struggle, the Hawaii State Department created the Snorkeling Safety Subcommittee to address public concern about snorkeling-related drownings. In a snorkeling safety study led by the subcommittee, 50 different snorkels were tested, and the experts examined non-fatal and fatal drownings. The interim report released in July 2020 concluded that ROPE-induced hypoxia is a factor in fatal and non-fatal snorkel drowning. The study also had a survey conducted at Oahu's most popular snorkeling spot, Hanamuma Bay, but only 36 participants, mostly locals, were interviewed due to this island's being closed to travel during the pandemic. The high altitude from air travel impacting someone's lungs may be a contributing factor, but there wasn't enough evidence in the study to confirm this. Since getting to Hawaii requires at least a 5-hour flight, it's possible that fatigue and stress from flying could play a role in someone's risk of drowning by ROPE. The Hawaiian Tourism Authority funded the study to develop appropriate safety messages. However, as of April, there have not been any public-facing messages on any of the official Hawaii tourism websites. Information cards have been passed out to most Kauai and Oahu tour boat operators, the subcommittee said. Although the study is preliminary and not robust in terms of participants and even calls for further investigation, it is also the only one to explore ROPE in snorkelers so far. Why aren't we in Hawaii letting people know? Said Jay Stumke, an Oahu-based attorney who filed the complaint on the Johnson's behalf. Pamphlets in rooms, apps, websites, in-room videos, all types of mechanisms to warn people. It's an easy enough thing to do. We believe had they done that, Ray would still be alive today, as well as many other people. Snorkeling safety tips. Always snorkel with a buddy, and if you can't swim, don't snorkel. Choose a snorkel with a wide opening and no constrictions in the mouthpiece. Learn to use the snorkel device before venturing out into the water that's too deep to stand in. If you feel shortness of breath, stay calm, remove the snorkel, and get out of the water immediately, Disgupta said. How to Stand Out in Virtual Hiring Landscape by Johnny C. Taylor. Johnny C. Taylor Jr. tackles your human resources questions as a part of a series for USA Today. Taylor is president and CEO of the Society of Human Resource Management, the world's largest HR professional society, and author of Reset, A Leader's Guide to Work in an Age of Upheaval. Question. With so much of today's job search process being online, I have difficulty getting through to a human. I feel like I get lost in the virtual shuffle. What are some ways I can stand out and connect with industry decision makers? Lauren. Answer. Navigating the virtual job search landscape can indeed be challenging, but there are strategies you can employ to enhance your visibility and connect with the industry decision makers effectively. First and foremost, cultivate a strong online presence that portrays you in a professional and compelling light. Utilize platforms like LinkedIn to showcase your achievements, skills, and qualifications. Your LinkedIn profile essentially serves as your online resume, and it provides an excellent opportunity to network with professionals in your industry. Timing is key when applying for positions. Aim to submit your application as soon as possible to maximize your visibility. Additionally, seek out company recruiters on platforms like LinkedIn and send them a personalized message expressing your interest in the position you've applied for. Expand your job search beyond traditional job websites by searching companies directly within your target industry. Many organizations opt to not post all job openings on external platforms, so exploring company websites and reaching out directly can uncover hidden opportunities. Tailor your application materials, including your resume and cover letter, to align with the specific job posting. Incorporate relevant keywords and phrases from the job description to enhance your visibility to applicant tracking systems and hiring managers. Additionally, demonstrate your knowledge of the company by integrating insights from your research into your application materials. Even in an increasingly digital environment, networking remains a powerful tool in the job search process. Leverage your professional contacts and attend industry events or conferences to expand your network. Follow up with connections regularly to maintain relationships, as these connections may lead to future job opportunities. By proactively increasing your visibility and connecting with industry decision makers, you can significantly enhance your chances of standing out in the competitive job market. Question. I am considering relocating out of the country. I am concerned about finding a fit for me. How should I go about gathering international organizations and/or other culture or countries? Craig. Exploring opportunities abroad can be a thrilling prospect, but gathering information and planning thoughtfully for such a transition is essential. Here are some steps you can take to collect information on international organizations and cultures as you consider relocating. Start by researching specific recruitment sites dedicated to international careers. These platforms often provide valuable insights into various organizations operating globally. Look into the opportunities and locations where these organizations have presence. Once you've identified potential destinations, research the countries and cultures you're interested in. Consider factors such as job opportunities, quality of life, cost of living, cultural norms, and language requirements. If feasible, visiting these areas can provide firsthand experience and valuable insights. Utilize your language skills, if applicable, to enhance your prospects in certain regions. Dusting off your language proficiency, whether college French or middle school Spanish, can open doors and facilitate smoother integration into new cultural environments. Readily accessible language learning applications can also help enrich your language capabilities. Tap into your professional and personal network for guidance and support. Inform your contacts about your aspirations to work abroad and inquire if they have any insights or connections in your desired field and location. Alumni associations, former employers, friends, family members, mentors, and networking organizations can all provide valuable advice and connections. Consider exploring opportunities with global organizations that have a presence in multiple countries, starting with U.S.-based global companies or those with significant U.S. operations can be practical entry points into the international job market. As you narrow down your options, tailor your application materials, including your cover letter and resume, to reflect your interest in the specific local location and culture. Research the visa requirements and procedures for working in your chosen industry and ensure you're prepared to navigate the necessary paperwork and legalities. Ultimately, embarking on a career abroad requires careful planning, research, and preparation. Gathering information on international organizations and cultures allows you to make the informed decisions and pursue exciting opportunities that align with your goals and aspirations. Your Favorite Hot Sauce May Be in Short Supply by Jessica Guyen. Huifeng Foods, maker of Sriracha hot sauce that comes in the rooster-adorned green cap bottles, says it has halted production until after Labor Day, sparking fears of another shortage. The California company blamed the popular condiment's production problems on the red jalapeno chili pepper that delivered the hot sauce's tangy sweet heat. They aren't red enough, according to Huifeng Foods. After reevaluating our supply of chili, we have determined that it is too green to proceed with production as it is affecting the color of the product, it told wholesale buyers in a letter obtained by USA Today. Huifeng Foods does not sell directly to consumers. We regret to inform you that we have decided to halt production until after Labor Day when our next chili season starts, the letter said. It could be a bland summer. Earlier shortages of red jalapenos made it nearly impossible to find Huifeng Foods Sriracha sauce. The company's chili garlic sauce and sambal oelek are also affected. Unfortunately, all orders that have been scheduled beginning on May 6, 2024 will be canceled and the status changed to pending, Huifeng Foods said. When asked about the production issues, Huifeng Foods told USA Today via email, "At this time, we have no comment." Will there be a Huifeng Foods sriracha shortage? Fellow sriracha makers are flush with red jalapenos and have not reported any chili pepper production issues, according to Stephanie Walker, professor and extension vegetable specialist at New Mexico State University. She speculates Huifeng Foods, which has been sourcing its chili peppers in Mexico, has not yet established solid relations with dependable jalapeno growers. I've been hearing third hand that they have tried to enlist new growers so that they would have a reliable stream of jalapenos, and it sounds like they haven't been entirely successful yet, said Walker, who is a co-director of her university's Chili Pepper Institute. Root of sriracha problem, fallout with supplier. California-based Underwood Ranches was Huifeng Foods' sole supplier of jalapenos for decades until partnership fell apart in 2017 over financial dispute. 2 years later, a jury determined that Huifeng breached its contract from Underwood Ranches and committed fraud, according to Underwood, $23.3 million. Now Underwood Ranches produces a rival brand of sriracha sauce. Chili peppers, which are usually picked by hand, are a labor-intensive crop. Huifeng Foods goes through about 50,000 tons of chili peppers a year to make its hot sauces. Red jalapenos, key to flavorful sriracha. Huifeng told retail customers that the color of its sriracha sauce has been affected by jalapenos harvested too soon, but not quality and flavor. However, using red jalapenos picked when they are still green would alter the taste, according to Walker. When they ripen, red jalapenos tend to be sweeter and have a more complex flavor. When she worked in the industry, Walker's processing plant rejected any red jalapeno that was more than 5% green. Red and green jalapenos come from the same plant. The green fruit are just the immature fruit, and they physiologically mature, then turn red, Walker said. One of the reasons we had the strict 5% limit is that green fruit can dilute the color, but it also affects the flavor. Long shortages have left fans frustrated. The Huifeng Sriracha Empire dates to end of the Vietnam War when David Tran relocated to Los Angeles and decided to go into the sriracha business. In 1980, he was delivering orders in a blue Chevy van. The sriracha produced by his company in Irwindale, California, has been a staple of hot sauce enthusiasts ever since. But the agonizingly long shortages that have plagued Huifeng in recent years have frustrated fans. As bottles reappear on grocery shelves and restaurant tables, and households stock up again, the belly aching eased. But some sriracha fans say they still feel scared and hoarding habits die hard. Don't like the new Meta AI chat tool? Here's how to mute it. Mary Walrath by Mary Walrath Holdridge. Artificial intelligence, or AI, remains one of the hot-button tech issues of the year, with an increasing number of companies racing to implement new tools and features using the technology. Some are excited about the prospect and look forward to trying out the developing tech. Many others are simply annoyed, but it's increasingly hard to ignore its presence. The latter is the case for many, perhaps even the majority, of Facebook and Instagram users, if feedback on social media is any indication. After parent company Meta rolled out its own AI integration earlier this month, netizens quickly flocked to forums like Reddit to complain about the integration and search for ways to turn it off. The Meta AI tool is present on Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Messenger to varying degrees, appearing in feeds, chats, searches, and other components of the platforms. While Meta advertised the tool as a way to get things done, learn, create, and connect with things that matter to you, many users have found the unsolicited presence of AI functionality nothing more than annoying. The bad news is that you cannot simply opt out of Meta AI entirely. There is no kill switch to turn it all off, but people are still dedicated to finding ways around the unwanted intrusions. One of the most bothersome features, Meta AI chat, for example, can be curtailed following simple steps. Hoping to turn your Meta AI chat off, here's how in a few quick steps. Open Facebook and look for the search bar at the top of the page. Instead of magnifying glass, it now appears as a blue gradient circle. Once in the search bar, click the blue arrow that appears to the right. This will take you to the Meta AI chat. Look for the eye icon in the upper right corner and click it. Click the mute option that appears on the next page. Select how long you want to mute the chat. If you're looking to do so indefinitely, choose the Until I Change It option. How to turn off Meta AI chat on Instagram. The process on Instagram is much the same as feedback, just on a slightly different interface. Locate the search bar at the top of the page and click it. Again, that was formerly a magnifying glass. Now it may appear as a circle. Click the arrow that appears to the right of the search bar. This will again bring you to the Meta AI chat. Click the eye icon in the top right-hand corner of the page. Select the mute option that appears on the following page. Click the slider at the bottom that says mute notifications, then select the duration of time that you want to be muted. Again, choose the Until I Change It option if you want it indefinitely. While these steps won't scrub the presence of Meta AI completely from your Facebook and Instagram experiences, they will mute and prevent notifications from Meta AI chat, one of the features netizens have found most bothersome. You can continue to use the search functions on both platforms like normal, but may see AI-suggested searches interspersed in regular search results. AI functions may appear when scrolling through your feed as well, appearing as full-size advertisements and cards or under regulatory posts offers of Ask Meta AI and Tell Me More About It. Unfortunately, this cannot be turned off at this time, but you can avoid clicking them to continue your browsing as usual. In WhatsApp and Messenger, simply delete the Meta AI chat thread that appears in the apps. 50 states, Montgomery, Alabama. The Southern Poverty Law Center is launching its advocacy institute as a way to teach Alabamians how to make change in their communities. This will be the program's first in Alabama, but its third in Mississippi, said the director of SPLC Alabama State Office. The SPLC is hoping to offer the program to a cohort of at least 15 people for the first year. Soldanta, Alaska. A state economist said the Kenai Peninsula job market has successfully rebounded, KDLL reported. Phoenix, Arizona. Amid Arizona's cactus-dominated landscape, some saguaros aren't what they seem they are, actually cell phone towers. Cell phone towers in Arizona are designed to resemble cactuses, especially the tall tree-like saguaros, which allow them to blend seamlessly into the desert skyline. This minimizes visual and environmental impact while providing connectivity. Little Rock, Arkansas. Arkansas lawmakers gave final approval to two bills regulating cryptocurrency mining operations in state and delivering them to the governor's office to be signed into law. Mount Shasta, California. For the past 2 years, Mount Shasta has emerged from winter covered in thick blankets of white snow that conceal what what decades of drought have done to the Northern California mountains' ancient glaciers. Will two seasons of robust snowfall help the glaciers recover from the damage done during droughts over the past decade? That's not likely, scientists still say. Pueblo, California. Pueblo, Colorado. A first-in-the-nation train has been tested near Pueblo for months and will soon be heading to its new home based in California. Stadler, a Swiss-based company, has designed and built the first hydrogen-powered train certified for the United States passenger rail. Norwalk, Connecticut. Interstate 95 in southwest Connecticut reopened in both directions Sunday, just days after a three-vehicle crash caused a gas tanker to erupt into flames, damaging an overpass and closing traffic on the busy highway. Dover, Delaware. The Delaware Motion Picture and Television Commission announced May 1st that the beginning of the Entertainment Industry Fund, a pilot program aiming to grow the first state's entertainment industry and market all Delaware, has Dover, Delaware. The Delaware Motion Picture and Television Commission announced on May 1st the beginning of the Entertainment Industry Fund, a pilot program aiming to grow the first state's entertainment industry and market all Delaware has to offer as a desirable location for industry producers and crews. Washington, D.C. A 14-year-old has been arrested and charged in connections to a string of theft and robberies, WUSA reported. Jacksonville, Florida. Two 29-year-old Florida women who have been best friends since kindergarten embarked on a 500-mile journey together, and not by way of automobiles or other traditional forms of transportation, but rather motorized toy cars. The women initially planned to break the Guinness World Record for longest journey in a toy car by driving down the coast of Florida from Jacksonville to Key West. Athens, Georgia. A fire ban got underway in 54 counties of Georgia, according to the Georgia Environmental Protection Division. The ban is in place until September 30th to help diminish air issues around ozone pollutants, according to a release from Georgia Forestry Commission. Honolulu, Hawaii. Hawaii is the first state legislator to call for a permanent and immediate ceasefire in the ongoing conflict between Israel, Hamas, and Gaza. Boise, Idaho. Officials said the annual Idaho Gives event raised more than $4 million in donations for nonprofits during a four-day campaign, KTVB reported. Springfield, Illinois. A winning $1 million lottery ticket was sold outside of Springfield recently. Bloomington, Indiana. The American Civil Liberties Unit of Indiana announced it is suing Indiana University for violating the First Amendment rights of three demonstrators who were arrested and given no trespass orders on April 25th at the pro-Palestinian encampment in Dunn Meadow. Des Moines, Iowa. Iowa Department of Education released the class of 2023 graduation figures with a notice that past graduation numbers have been accidentally inflated because of a possibly decade-old code error. Topeka, Kansas. Schools across Kansas can now hire more education specialists and address the needs of special education programs. In a bipartisan effort, Kansas legislators increased funding for special education by $75 million. Louisville, Kentucky. The home of former University of Kentucky men's basketball coach John Calipari hit the market with an asking price of just below $4 million. Springfield, Illinois. Springfield, a 51-year-old man has been arrested to 50... Springfield, Louisiana. A 54-year-old man has been sentenced to 50 years in prison and physical castration after being convicted of raping and impregnating a 14-year-old girl. Kennebunk, Maine. Two people were hospitalized Saturday after an antique vehicle in the May Day parade unexpectedly surged forward, crushing several people between the vehicle and float-carrying children. Annapolis, Maryland. Over a quarter million Maryland households may be losing the benefit from the Federal Communications Commission's Affordable Connectivity Program, as funds are expected to be exhausted by the end of the month, while work to connect some of the locations in the state continues. Boston, Massachusetts. going through the personal effects of their late father, a Massachusetts family found 22 pieces of Japanese art stolen during World War II. Now, with the help of FBI Boston Division, they have been returned to the rightful owner in Japan. This has completed the money section of USA Today on Tuesday, May 7th, 2024.